The following is a paid program. 1590 WAKR and its owners, the Rubber City Radio Group, are not responsible for its content.
Money Talks, the show that gives you the tools to navigate a challenging economy, help you build and protect your wealth, and provide timely news and information to manage your money. Here's the host of Money Talks, Richard Peterson, president of Capital Financial Group on 1590 WAKR.
Well, good morning, Sandy.
Good morning. How was your week?
My week was just fine. How about yours?
Yeah, it was pretty good. Kind of busy. You know, I don't know if you noticed when you pulled up in the parking lot that the tree of lights is completely lit.
There was.
See? It's too early in the morning. You hadn't had your coffee yet?
I'm just kidding.
Oh, okay.
Just kidding.
Yeah, we did raise a lot of money to help Haven of Rest, so that was really nice. So, yeah, we can feel good about that. And if you participated, thank you.
Yes, yeah. A very good organization. And how's your Christmas shopping going?
Not so much. Yeah. I'll just say that.
It's just sneaking up on all of us.
I know, isn't it? Is it 12 days before Christmas at this point, right? Am I right?
Or maybe less.
Is it less?
Right, because 2 weeks from Thursday, this past Thursday.
And okay.
I think part of it, there's no snow on the ground. It just doesn't give you that
Christmas feeling.
Right.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, absolutely.
I think if we had a few inches of snow on the ground right now, you'd have more people, ooh, Christmas coming.
Yeah. And if the snow gods are listening, we're just kidding.
Yes.
We really don't want the snow. Shh. Yeah. But the gas prices are looking good, though.
Yeah, they're looking good.
We just have a little extra money in our pockets to go buy something, huh?
Absolutely. And good morning, everyone. I am your host, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. This is Money Talks. Thanks for joining us on this Saturday morning, the 13th day of December. Yep, 12 days left until the big Christmas day. And as we take a look at the markets, if you remember a week ago as I sat here, we were talking about record highs in the Dow, record highs in the S&P. Well, guess what? They're gone. It was a pretty grim week in the markets this week, all due to oil, which we'll be talking about. As we saw, the Dow closed down 315 points yesterday to finish out the week at 17,280. The NASDAQ was down 54, closed at 46.53, and the S&P 500, well, it was down also, closed at 2,002, just 3 points above the 50-day moving average, which is a, well, it's an indicator for those technical analysts out there. First of all, if we take a look at some of the other areas, we see natural gas was up 16 cents to close at $3.80. We saw gas futures down another 3 cents to $1.59. Oil, the West Texas Intermediate, closed down $2.14 to a five-year low of $57.81. We also saw the Brent crude close down $1.83 to close at $61.85. At the pumps, I saw all kinds of prices this morning, anything from $2.39 to $2.49. And yes, if you live in Oklahoma City, you're paying $1.99. How does that sound? And if you look at the gold, well, it was down $3.10, closed at $1,222.50 an ounce. Silver, down 5 cents, closed at $17.06. And the volatility index, or the fear gauge measure, well, it was up another dollar and closed at $21.08, above 20, kind of showing some fear out there. The bond market, we see the 2-year is down to 0.54%, the 5-year at 1.51%, the 10-year all the way down to 2.08%, and the 30-year now rests at 2.74%. Of course, what we had is government, the House passed the $1.1 trillion spending bill. We're still waiting for the Senate. We have until midnight tonight. Labor Department reported on Thursday the jobless claims fell 3,000 to 294,000 in the week ending December the 6th. And we saw that the crude oil stockpiles fell by 3.7 barrels to 379 million barrels in the week ending November the 28th. Inventories are still in the upper half of the average range. Meanwhile, the gasoline inventories increased by 2.1 million barrels, but were well below the lower limit of the average range, and distillate inventories rose by 3 million barrels but remain near the lower limit of the average range also. We did see the Commerce Department reported a report showing that U.S. retail sales rose by more than expected in the month of November, report said that retail sales climbed 0.7% in November, following an upwardly revised 0.5% increase in October. All right, so what's going on with the oil? It just keeps falling and falling and falling. Why is that? Well, there's actually three components to the reason that oil is falling. The first one, the dollar. As the dollar gets stronger, since oil is priced in dollars, you're going to find the prices will ultimately fall as the dollar gets stronger. But two of the other sides are supply and demand. And actually, we have higher supply and we have lower demand. So we're actually hitting both sides. Now, when we look at the good side, of course, it is so nice to pull up to the pump and pay $10, $15, $20 less than what you paid a few months ago to fill up that tank. That always helps to have that extra money. It helps businesses in general with their energy costs. That's always a good thing, which can help the bottom line. With the prices falling, of course, we're going to hear great financial distress problems in countries like Venezuela, yay. Russia, yay. And I'm not offended by that whatsoever. But you also, you know, you start seeing the sides of concern about demand. Now, the demand is saying, well, you know, what's going on with global demand? The fact that it's going down, that's not a good sign. You're looking at places like Europe that are teetering on recession. You're seeing that the rate of growth in China is slowing down. And these are the demand factors out there. So what we're seeing is we're just seeing a quick knee-jerk reaction to this, as this is all happening so quickly out there. Dollar getting stronger, supply getting increasing, demand worries coming into the picture. Where exactly is this going to stop? Who knows? We may have seen the bottom yesterday. We may see oil fall even further. Many of the experts out there seem to feel that we're somewhere in the range right around here where things should settle out in the near term here. But certainly it has taken a stress and a toll on the markets in the past week, considering we hit highs last week. Now, here's something very interesting. This past week, what we saw was one of the worst weeks in the markets in quite some time. As a matter of fact, we have not seen this since November of 2011 for the Dow, as far as a bad week. We haven't seen a bad week in the S&P since May of 2012. November of 2011, I'm sorry, for the Dow. And basically, this comes into one of the top 10 in the past 5 years for the Dow. Now, if we go back a little bit, and if you recall the summer of 2011, that was kind of a bad term. We kind of refresh our memories. In July of 2011, we got to watch, the grade school temperament of Congress trying to get the debt ceiling resolved at that point. They finally get it done at the 11th hour, and here come the problems of Europe hard and heavy again. We've got the S&P downgrading the United States from its AAA rating. And if you recall, the week of July the 29th, well, the Dow fell 4.2% for the week. We also have the week of August 5th. It fell 5.8%. If we look at August the 19th of that summer, fell another 4%. September the 23rd, it fell 6.4% that week. And November the 25th of that year, well, it fell another 4.8%. From the week of July, the last week of July to the first week of October, well, we were about 22-23% down in the markets. So, yeah, we're down 3.8% from a week ago. You know, the markets, they never go straight up. They never go straight down. But certainly, oil has wreaked some havoc here. Now, on the other side of it, at this point, we're going to see mostly good things here domestically in the United States. The concern is if it continues to fall any further, well, then we could start to see some bad things happen here in the United States, which would mean, you know, laying off of employees that work for some of these oil companies. You're going to see some of the money spent originally is going to dry up. You're going to see some of these smaller companies that have taken out loans or have bonds outstanding, considered junk bonds, that could ultimately default because they're not able to make enough money. And also, too, of course, we saw OPEC just recently. They said that they weren't going to cut supply. Normally in these situations, they would cut supply to keep the price up. Well, now you're looking that we did hear that the Saudis did temper down and cut supply in November. It really didn't do much here for the market yet. And they're going to be having another meeting here in the near future. We'll certainly see what they have to say about cutting supply. In the meantime, though, when you're used to $100, $110 a barrel and now you're down to $60, certainly all of their budgets, which are looking for those revenues, are getting strained. We're talking about Iran. We're talking about Russia. We're talking about Venezuela. And they're hurting the economies. And so certainly things are going to change. Nothing lasts forever. Things change very quickly. And, of course, we've got the government. Well, we're going to see if they're going to be able to the Senate get that bill through by midnight tonight. And with that, we'll be back after these commercial breaks, and we're going to talk about the problems that we have with investing and our brains. We'll be right back.
Now back to Professor Money, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. Available online at ProfessorMoney.com and taking your calls at 330-370-1590 with more of Money Talks on 1590 WAKR.
And we welcome you back on this Saturday morning. You realize our brains are a problem? Yep. We're wired to respond to the immediate threats and gratifications of a simpler and more dangerous world. Our short-term bias inhibits our ability to deal with longer-term issue challenges that won't become real for 30 to 50 years, challenges like preparing for a financially secure retirement. Brain imaging shows that we use the same parts of our brains to think about our future selves that we use to think about strangers. If we are so estranged from our future, how can we be taught to care? Well, our brains are the problem. How can we trick our brains into a better financial behavior? Well, this is the province of behavioral economists. Traditional economists tell us that what we should do, how much we should save, and how to invest. But behavioral economists investigate how to get us to do it. Well, surprise, surprise, we're not entirely rational about our money. Some people think that because money is quantitative, it's analytical. Well, that's wrong. Money is intensely emotional. More couples divorce over money than divorce over love and sex. Let's look at some of the mental biases that get in the way of intelligent financial behavior. Short-term thinking, probably the number one problem. We spend a great deal of energy thinking about the near future, but very little energy on the distant future. Many of us will spend more time selecting a restaurant for dinner than selecting investments for our 401k plan. And how can we change this short-sighted behavior? Well, people need to engage in thinking about the distant future to imagine what their lives will be like in order to care about it today. For retirement planning, the typical approach is to present a 30-year financial projection. But that's analytical, not emotional. Behavioral studies have shown that a more effective technique in somewhat odd, but show them pictures of themselves, modified to look how they will look when they're older. Introduce them to their future selves. When people can imagine their future, they will more readily prepare for it. Immediate gratification. It's not that we don't want to save or exercise or eat healthy foods. It's just that in decision-making moment, we seek immediate gratification. Pleasure now trumps pleasure later. In another study, students were asked to choose a banana or chocolate as a snack after class. When they were asked a week before the class, three-quarters chose the banana. But when they were asked at the actual snack time, 3/4 actually chose the chocolate. Somehow, healthy decisions are harder when it requires the sacrifice of immediate gratification. So what's the solution? Well, ask the students to order their snack to commit to their decision a week ahead of time. Don't ask people to save more today. Ask them to agree today to save more tomorrow. It seems to work better that way. We also have a reluctance to change. Over and over, academic studies and real-world data point to the fact that we are reluctant to change things. Behavioral economists call this the status quo bias. It's easy to leave things the way they are and difficult to make a change. Change requires thinking, decision-making, and action. Marketeers understand this and make use of it. They look for ways to set the default to yes. They know the power of moving from opt-in to opt-out as the power of a subscription where each new month the service automatically is delivered rather than each new month requiring a new purchase. In 401k plans, when employees must take action to participate, select investments, or increase savings rate, the number of employees who take these actions, well, is relatively low. The hurdle to get somebody to make a change, even a simple one, is high. So why not make good financial decisions the default option by automatically enrolling employees in their 401ks? At companies that have implemented this program, employee savings rates have doubled or tripled. And loss aversion. Sure, we all hate to lose something that we worked hard to get, but most of us hate losing something much more than we love winning the same thing. In other words, if you have $10, the fear of losing a dollar is about twice as motivating as the desire of gaining a dollar. So aside from addicted gamblers, fear dominates greed. What we're learning here is that you have to look at the long term, not what just happens in a single day in the market, or a week, or a month, or even a year. Planning for retirement is a multi-year process. Living your retirement is also a multi-year process. You have to look long term. You have to keep emotion out of the decisions, and you have to make sure that you understand that making emotional decisions on short-term data is going to always lead to mistakes. So hopefully this gives you some more insight, and we'll be back after these commercial breaks.
Now back to Professor Money, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. Available online at ProfessorMoney.com and taking your calls at 330-370-1590. With more of Money Talks on 1590 WAKR.
And we welcome you back. It is time for the Money Talks Joke of the Week. And this week, Sandy, it's about a child who was a typical four-year-old girl, cute, inquisitive, bright as a new penny. And when she expressed difficulty in grasping the concept of marriage, well, her father decided to pull out his wedding photo album, thinking that the visual images would help her to understand. One page after another, he pointed out the bride arriving at the church, the entrance, the wedding ceremony, the recessional, the reception, etc. He turns to his daughter and he says, "Now do you understand?" She says, "I think so. That's when mommy came to work for us."
You know, as a woman, I can so relate to that one.
Yes. I would have liked to have known his answer to that. Anyway, as we look, you know, we've got the Senate in session right now that they're trying to get this spending bill voted on and passed. And, you know, I think all of us have pretty much at this point have quite a high level of disdain for government in Washington and exactly the processes that take place and so forth. But unfortunately, they are so intertwined with the way that business operates and works. For example, one of the reasons, not even mentioned this week, as to why the markets did as badly as they did. You know, of course, we had a big announcement out of China this past week. And I'm not going to get into the details at the moment, but what I'm basically pointing out is the fact that, you know, you can do all of your research and you can do all of your planning, and in a single stroke of the pen or a single declaration by a government agency or body of government, things can change right then and there, overnight, done, changed. The strategy that you had in place, over, doesn't work anymore. So, you know, you have to always be flexible and be willing to understand what the new outlook, rules, bills, and so forth are doing with government. So I thought we'd take a little more of a humorous approach today. And I'm going to go through some profound statements. In my many years, I've come to a conclusion that one useless man is a shame, two is a law firm, and three or more is Congress, as stated by John Adams. Mark Twain says, if you don't read the newspaper, you are uninformed. But if you do read the newspaper, you are misinformed. He also said, suppose you were an idiot, and suppose you were a member of Congress. Ah, but then I repeat myself. Winston Churchill, I contend that for a nation to try to tax itself into prosperity is like a man standing in a bucket trying to lift himself up by the handle. How about George Bernard Shaw? A government which robs Peter to pay Paul can always depend on the support of Paul. G. Gordon Liddy, a liberal is someone who feels a great debt to his fellow man, which debt he proposes to pay off with your money. How about foreign aid might be defined as a transfer of money from poor people in rich countries to rich people in poor countries? It was by Douglas Casey, who was a classmate of Bill Clinton at Georgetown. Giving money and power to government, well, it's like giving whiskey and car keys to teenage boys. How about Ronald Reagan's? A government's view of the economy could be summed up in a few short phrases. If it moves, tax it. If it keeps moving, regulate it. And if it stops moving, subsidize it. Or how about Will Rogers? He says, I don't make jokes. I just watch the government and report the facts. Or how about P.J. O'Rourke? If you think health care is expensive now, wait until you see what it costs when it's free. Or how about Mark Twain again, who says, no man's life, liberty, or prosperity is safe while the legislature is in session. Winston Churchill says, the inherent vice of capitalism is the unequal sharing of the blessings, whereas the inherent blessing of socialism is the equal sharing of misery. About from Anonymous, we have, talk is cheap, except when Congress does it. Mark Twain also goes on to say, the only difference between a tax man and a taxidermist is that at least the taxidermist leaves the skin. And what the country needs are more unemployed politicians. Edward Langley. And lastly, from Thomas Jefferson, a government big enough to give you everything you want is strong enough to take everything you have. Some profound statements here about politics, as of course we have a big political decision being made here in the Senate right now with the $1.1 trillion spending bill. And there are so many things in there which we will, once it's finalized, kind of review in the upcoming weeks. But one of the things in there that I found maybe frightening, maybe uncomfortable. A lot of people out there that still have a conventional pension that they'll be receiving at retirement time, or those that are already receiving a pension from a place that they worked. Well, because of a lot of financial difficulties that we experienced in the Great Recession of 2008, you have some problems now that are existing with the guarantee program out there that covers these pension plans. And in the bill right now, which basically was a Democratic priority. What they're looking to do is basically, in a time of financial distress, one of the ways that they're looking to protect the coverage area is to basically reduce benefits to current retirees at multi-employer pension funds. Of course, we don't know all the details on that yet, but it's something that we'll be looking into when this is passed. It's just a little bill, by the way, that they're working on, 1,603 pages, so it's a small thing. Just got a few little issues in there. But we'll kind of comb through those and see what exactly transpires once we get this thing finalized, and kind of let us know and get a little bit of insight of what we should be looking for. Well, now's the time to get on the phones for the Money Talks quiz of the week. If you're unfamiliar with it or a new listener to the show, by calling in and being our contestant, you're automatically going to win breakfast at Bob Evans. I'm going to ask you three questions. They're multiple choice, so it's not that difficult. No calculators, paper, and pens needed. 330-370-1590 is the number into the studio, 330-370-1590. And if you call in and you are our contestant, you get all three right. We're going to move you into the bonus round for one more additional question for second breakfast. 330-370-1590. We're going to take caller number four, and we'll be right back.
Now back to Professor Money, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. Available online at ProfessorMoney.com and taking your calls at 330-370-1590. With more of Money Talks on 1590 WAKR.
And we welcome you back to Money Talks on this Saturday morning. It is time for the Money Talks quiz of the week. Sandy, who's our contestant?
I have to joke about this on the air. When I answer the phone, he goes, "Well, this is Richard. Already knows me," and I'm like, "Well, that's an interesting name. But what's your name?" So, Charlie from Delmage, we have on the phone. Charlie, you're on the air.
I am.
Yes.
Good morning, Charlie.
Morning, Richard.
How you doing today?
Doing well. Going to get me a breakfast here, anyhow.
Uh-huh.
Well, you're familiar with the show. You know that I'm just going to ask you 30 multiple choice questions today, right?
That sounds good.
Okay, you're ready for all 30?
Betcha.
Okay.
And if I don't know them, I'll check with you.
Okay.
Right. Or Sandy.
That's right.
Okay. My first question for you, Charlie, what is a barrel of West Texas Intermediate oil selling for as of yesterday? $57.31, $57.81, or $58.21?
I don't have a clue.
That's not the right answer. Oh.
Let's go with the second one.
$57.81?
Yeah.
You knew what the answer was. You're automatic. You're absolutely correct.
Geez, I thought I was going to take off the pressure by missing it.
Oh. Okay. Question?
You know how I am.
Yeah, I know. Everybody's competitive, and that's what I like. That's what makes it so good. My next question for you, Charlie. How much is the Dow Jones Industrial Average up year to date? It is positive year to date. How much is it positive? 4.2%, 5.1%, or 6.3%? Since January 1st, how much is the Dow Jones Industrial Average up this year? 4.2, 5.1, or 6.3%?
I'm going to go with the second one.
5.1? Mm-hmm. Well,
Actually.
Wait.
Because of this week, we're only sitting at 4.2%. How about that?
Like I said, that takes the pressure off.
Yeah.
That's your strategy, eh?
Yeah, we gave up 3.8% this week. That wasn't pretty. And my last question for you, Charlie, is how many years must you own a Roth IRA before your earnings become tax-free? 1 year, 3 years, or 5 years? How many years must you own your Roth IRA before the earnings become tax-free? 1 year, 3 years, or 5 years?
I'm going to go with the first one, 1 year.
Actually, it's 5 years.
Now, I'll have to check with my financial advisor about
I brought that up because with the Roth has some very unique attributes to it. First of all, it's the only vehicle where if you go to take money out of it, you're taking principal out first and not earnings. So that's why somebody who, you know, is in their 20s, 30s, 40s can take money out, not be penalized, not have to pay income tax on it. And with the Roth, the only caveat is that you have to own it for 5 years before the earnings come out tax-free. And what's nice about it, for example, if you opened up your Roth today, December the 13th, you get credit back to January 1st. So you almost get that first year already under your belt. But very few people run into any problems with the five-year rule because you usually open it and you put money in it, and then years down the road, you start to take stuff out. And even what you take out, it's first principal and then the earnings. So, well, one out of three, Charlie.
Well, very good. Thank you. Merry Christmas, Sandy. Merry Christmas, Richard.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Tell Melissa Merry Christmas also, if you would, please.
I will do that. And you say Merry Christmas to your wife, and you enjoy your weekend.
Thank you.
All right.
Guys, be careful out there. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
How'd you do?
When I heard you talking about the oil prices at the beginning, and then you went, the next one was like such a small little change. I was like, oh, that's a trick question.
It wasn't a trick question.
I was thinking it would be like if it was dramatic difference in the you know, amounts, then you would have been easier to guess. I say guess because, you know, I know all this stuff. Yeah, I wouldn't be guessing.
The information was presented in the beginning of the show.
Okay.
And then,
yes.
Well, you know.
Yes. We were,
Here's that thing for short-term memories.
I need the instant gratification and I'm done. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have a interesting article I came across this past week, and it's titled The 10 Things That Teens Should Know About Money. And so I thought I would share it because, first of all, it would help any teens out there and 20-year-olds. But also, if you listen to it, a lot of the information pertains to 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds, 50-year-olds, 60-year-olds, 70-year-olds. Let's start. And it says, teens in the recession. Today's teens appear to be relatively savvy about money, which isn't surprising given that they grew up just as the Great Recession was shaping the country's economic path. Many of them watched their parents struggle with lost jobs or savings. They got battered by the stock market, but they also faced the same money temptations as entered other generations of teens. And here are the concepts that can help these teens make smarter choices. First of all, save early. When it comes to squirreling money away for later, the current generations of teens seems to be on the right path. A 2014 survey of more than 1,000 14 to 24-year-olds by TD Ameritrade found that 57% said saving money was very important to them, up from 50% in last year's survey. 9 in 10 respondents said that they would save at least part of a $500 gift. With the time value of money and compounding, the earlier that you save, of course, the more money you'll have. Earlier you save also, the less you'll actually have to save to get more by the time you reach retirement age. People don't understand how critical it is that the younger you start, the better off you'll be. Embrace the stock market. Like millennials, teens tend to be relatively conservative and avoid the stock market, perhaps because they saw their parents lose money in it during the Great Recession. But investing in the stock market is part of a healthy financial strategy for long-term savings, including retirement savings, and avoiding the stock market could hurt the teens. Talk with their parents. Even if parents don't feel like financial whizzes, they actually have a lot of useful knowledge to impart. Simply talking about saving and investing with parents can help pass on the important lessons in sound financial habits. Even talking about financial mistakes, like not saving enough in an emergency fund, can help steer teens away from replicating those same errors later on in life. Avoid debt. Even teens are at risk of building up credit card debt, which is usually costly. The TD Ameritrade survey found that on average, teens carry $749 in debt, up from $485 last year. That kind of debt level can take years for some to pay off, and it's also very expensive since fees and interest rates add to the total cost. Protect your privacy. Privacy might not sound like a financial issue, but it is. That's because identity theft can wreak havoc on your financial life and end up costing you a lot of money. It pays to get in the habit of guarding your Social Security number carefully and only sharing it when absolutely necessary. The same goes for credit card and banking information. Know the difference between needs and wants. I think this goes for anybody at any age. This is a tough one for teens because they are surrounded by temptations, from pizza nights with friends to the latest fashion trends. Parents can help their teens distinguish between needs and wants by encouraging them to make two separate lists for each, of allowing them to prioritize on how to spend their money accordingly. A need is something we must spend our money on. A want, well, that comes from money we save. Focus on goals. Writing out goals for both the short and long term can help guide spending decisions. For example, if a teen wants to have spending money on vacation over the summer, she or he might decide to skip the purchase of a new top now. Experts say making the goals as specific as possible can help the teens grasp and plan for them. Embrace mistakes. While losing money is painful, sometimes it's the best way to learn. Watching a first stock purchase lose money or building up credit card debt after an unexpected expense are rites of passage along the path to a healthy financial life. Learning those lessons early can help teens avoid repeating them when they're older and have more at stake. And be frugal. Since shopping at thrift stores for vintage items is now considered cool, high school students can spend less on their wardrobes without risking social alienation. And the frugality extends to other areas too. More Americans of all ages are embracing the do-it-yourself culture that can keep costs down for food, clothing, and even haircuts. So a couple of tidbits for the teens and even for some of us older people to remind us of some of the things that we need to be aware of. And my last, statement, I guess, before the end of the show today. As we get closer to Christmas, of course, we're in a season of giving and good spirit and magical times and so forth. One of the things to kind of think about that kind of puts us back into a reality check and so forth, question for today, if you can put yourself into this thought processes, it's something that you can look at things a little bit differently. What if today was your last day on earth? What would you do with it? I'm going to leave you with that thought. What would you do if today was the last day on earth? How would you look at things? What would you do? How would you contact people? What would you do with some of your money? Just think about it. And as another show comes to an end, it has been a great pleasure to share the past hour with you. We always welcome the opportunity at Capital Financial Group to work with you as your personal financial advisor. Let us help you to eliminate the worry that comes with retirement. If you need help with your financial planning, rolling over a 401k from a previous job or a 403b, we can help. We can help with financial planning. We can help with managing your portfolio. Give us a call. Our number is 330-668-6991. That's 330-668-6991. Thanks so much for having us in today, and we'll see you next Saturday at 7 right here on Money Talks. Have a great week.